Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
He's a lawyer.
Is he?
Yes. And it occurred to me that at no point in my life, except since this podcast has started, sure, have I talked to this many lawyers.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And then I was just like, man, I should start like coming up with, you know, hypothetical situations to
you get your legal issues yeah, taken care of.
Yeah.
Hey, so the environment's really great, but let's say someone gets in a car accident
and their neck is hurt.
And they need to go to a doctor, but someone's only pay. What would you do in that scenario?
Exactly. The environment's great and all, but
right.
My car, I mean my friend's car. Yeah. I mean a car I know. A car I know. Herbie, right?
Herbie, yeah.
That's
awesome.
Herbie.
That's a really shrewd strategy. Get what you can.
Right?
Over the phone. I love that.
Dollar bills, y'all.
That's awesome. I like that.
Yep.
Okay, people. Welcome to Season 3, Episode 32 of the CFD's Podcast for Good. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I am the program manager of the Watch Take a Bite Fun Drive. I am joined by...
I really thought you were going to hit the table when you did that.
I did.
Like, you were like, yeah, I'm excited. This is who I am. And you didn't. And I was just
because
like,
I was
oh.
Like,
yeah.
Because I knew that we were doing yeah, our listening
like,
thing.
Yeah, the listening thing. It'd be like this weird loud
it
talk.
Would be this, yeah.
I'm Heather Lucas.
Yeah.
I'm the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
Also known as DJ Lukey Luke.
DJ Lukey Luke.
Only by Philip Kerrigan. That's the only person who...
You're not going to remember DJ that Lukey name Luke after today.
I know. Yeah. I know. That's too bad.
Yeah,
it's a great name. DJ yeah, Lukey Luke.
Put it in your phone and when
do
in
you,
my contact.
You call DJ Lukey Luke.
Yeah,
come
that'll
up.
Come
I like
up
that, actually.
Yeah.
We are talking about environment... We've talked about environment a few times.
We have.
It's obviously an ongoing conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But in particular, we talked about clean air
yeah,
in this one. So one thing I do love about the topics we select, or you select, because you're the one who picks them.
You're welcome.
Oh, by the way, we spoke, or we did not speak to anybody.
Again with this we stuff.
I know, sorry.
I mean, I do like that you're like, we're a team here.
Yeah. We didn't do anything. Heather sat down with Bern Johnson, the executive director of the Environmental Law Alliance Worldwide.
Yeah.
They're a CFT member charity in the program. But he in particular talked to Heather about clean air as it relates to the environment. What I was saying is
yes,
one of the things that I like about how we've sort of been able to craft the conversation around environment is... we've never really done the whole like, oh, this big old environment question.
Yeah.
Very much like we've had the privilege of talking to people who are exclusively connected to pieces of the environment.
Yeah.
Whether it's Harbor Wild Watch, which is looking into like making
ocean,
sure yeah, the ocean
waterways
are taken care of. The folks who worked with saving the orcas.
Yeah.
We've always been able to like really target
yeah,
environmental issues because I think unfortunately, and I've said this a bunch of times to you and on this podcast,
yeah,
I think unfortunately it like the conversation around helping the environment becomes too big and opaque.
Yes.
Right? It becomes too intimidating.
Yes.
And so when you begin to focus it to where we're talking now about clean air, how do we get clean air?
Yeah.
Then people, I think, feel more like, yes, that's tangible.
Yeah, exactly.
That feels more like I can do something about
yeah,
that. Like, I remember we talked to that one lady, And she said, stop using plastic straws.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I will stop using plastic
straws. And you stopped using plastic straws.
Because then you feel like, okay, I mean, that's something I can do. Yeah. I don't know what I can do about global warming.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, other than advocate for it and get, like, nice fueling cars and turn my fan off and have conversations. Mm-hmm. But, like, I know that I can do better recycling plastics. Mm-hmm. Right? And so I feel like that's a good thing that we've been able to kind of do.
Totally, yeah.
Good job, Lucas.
Hey, thanks.
Good job, DJ Lukey Luke.
DJ Lukey Luke.
So before we get into our conversation before we feel the burn.
Yeah.
before we talk to Vern Johnson, hopefully he's okay with that.
Yeah.
Because he's a lawyer, he could sue me.
He could.
You have a question.
He probably should.
You have a question on the pod.
Yeah, well, you kind of did answer a little bit, but I mean, what do you do, Philip Kerrigan, to help make the environment better? Of course, your environment is definitely a smaller environment, but what do you do as a person to make the environment better?
Yeah, we kind of just talked about it, but like for me, the toughest part is always like they talk about like carbon footprint and all that sort of stuff. Like it's very, very difficult for me to wrap my head around all of that. Mm-hmm. So then, like, one of the biggest things for me is, as we've been talking with people in this podcast, you see things on social media or you see things on the news.
Yeah.
Biggest one is the plastic thing.
Okay.
You see those floating, like, plastic islands.
The ocean,
right? And then you hear things like, you know, a crazy percentage of fish have plastic in their stomachs
that humans are now breathing.
We're consuming
microplastics.
Yeah. So for me, it's definitely the plastic thing.
Yeah.
Is a big deal. And I've been attempting to try and very much get away from those.
Sure.
I still do not understand the recycling numbers. I don't get is a one recyclable? This weekend I was on a camping trip with my parents and my mom, who is an avid recycler, big time recycler. She's super good at it. She lived in Germany where they have like this intricate system you have to follow.
Sure.
And we of course have this like fourth grader, like throw everything in one big bucket and they'll take care of it.
Yes.
I remember being like, okay, well, what's the number on the bottom? Because I had read that like the ones are recyclable, right? The sixes are trickier.
Yeah.
So then I was like, oh, it's a one. Cool. And I started to throw it in recycling. She's like, oh no, you can't recycle that. And I was like, what? Well, why? She's like, oh, well, think of it like this. If it has a thinner neck or top than it does a body, then you can recycle it.
Huh.
And I was like, well, this is the first I'm hearing of that now. Now I'm going to change my whole recycling policy.
Yeah.
But she knows because she's a big time environmentalist. My mom, you know, is a huge advocate for, you know, taking care of the environment and stuff. So I was like, all right, well, now I got to figure out a different way to do these things. So the plastic one is one where I'm very much aware of it because, like that seems like if the oceans get taken over by mounds and mounds of plastic, it cannot be good for anybody.
No, it cannot. Well, like with that plastic thing, I mean, I don't look at the numbers and I don't care about the numbers. Mm-hmm. If it's made of plastic, I'm putting it in the bin.
Yeah, because
I'm not a professional.
Right. I don't know what you're doing.
I don't know what you need.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You gotta explain it a little better. Recycling people, whoever you are, just
them.
Communicate it more with us. Send us all a news alert.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, because like I do feel even confused there.
Sure.
Like because you can't recycle the cap.
Yeah.
Right? But you can't also put dirty plastic into the bin. You have to clean out your plastic.
Clean the plastic,
right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, you know.
Yeah, what do you do?
What do you do, man?
Yeah.
That's one. Plastic for me. What about you?
I do similar stuff, but like things that are single use, I try to avoid. And then I have definitely embraced the whole like reusable bags.
Yeah.
If I do use any
big
kind
time
of
one, by the way. What a cool idea.
Yeah, and that's a super simple change.
Have people in Thurston County really missed their plastic bags?
They haven't. Yeah. And there are other counties. I live in Mason County and they haven't done that yet. Mm-hmm. So there's still plastic bags out there for Mason County, but I don't see that it's not going to be a future thing, right? I think that's a future thing for like all Washington counties.
It's a pretty easy ask.
Right?
Yeah.
And it could be just one of those things that the country as a whole just starts to do.
Yeah.
But reusable plastic bags or totes. And then when I go to buy things like produce, you know, they always have those single-use bags.
Yeah.
I keep them and then use them again and again.
Cool.
Or I have other bags that I use for that.
Cool.
Reusable water bottles. And then if I have things like toothpaste container, the toothpaste that I buy, you can send the empty container back to the company and they recycle it. Mm-hmm. It's Tom's of Maine.
They put the toothpaste back in the tube?
I don't know that they do that.
Wow, that makes that phrase totally pointless now. Can't put toothpaste back in the tube? Yeah, you can.
Yeah, apparently.
Colgate does it all the time.
Yeah. And then there are charitable organizations that need certain things that when you're done with them, you know, you can recycle them.
That's
and
cool.
One of those things, I don't know if you use this product, but I do, mascara.
I don't often use it. Okay. I mean, only for Halloween.
Only for Halloween. Okay. So, yeah, mascara. The mascara wand itself is something that organizations who work with animals who have gotten, like, oil on them and things, they use the mascara wands. That's a necessary tool for them.
That's pretty cool.
So send in your used mascara. And they take the wand they clean it and then they use it.
That's neat. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find the link for that so that people can send in their mascara.
I have a sub question to the pod.
Yes.
Do you ever feel uncomfortable
going
to Fred Meyer with your Safeway reusable bag? I'm always like, I put it up there and I'm always like, the cashier's going to give me some look like, really?
I used to feel uncomfortable about that because I have a Trader Joe's one.
Yes.
So I'd go to Fred Meyer and just be like,
Trader Joe's
bag.
Yeah.
But it was part of the getting used to using those bags in the first place. Yeah. That was like the initial discomfort for me. And then when I was like, oh, is this a Trader company? Like, am I betraying you somehow?
Yes.
I don't mean to, cashier and people who work here. Mm-hmm. But that, I had that for a moment. Mm-hmm. And now I'm cool.
Yeah, I feel like you should have your branded bags. Where are we going? Fred Meyer? Grab the Fred Meyer bags.
Yeah, right? Well, I also used to do this thing where I'm not cool with having branded stuff. Like, I like stuff to be plain.
Yes.
Or very simple as far as, you know, those kinds of things go. I'm not advertising for you.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when it came to those kinds of totes, if you got a free tote from something, they would always put their logo on it.
Yeah.
And then I'd just be like, I don't really want to advertise for you, random bank I don't go to.
Yes.
So I would like...
Random bank I don't go to, because they hand out totes left and right.
They hand out totes left and right. So then I would like make art to put over the logo.
That's awesome.
I don't do that now as much because I'm like, I don't care.
God bless Heather Lucas and her anti-corporate. I love it. That's
down
awesome.
With the man.
I'm drawing on your bag!
That's right. Down with the proletariat.
So we are going to dive into Heather's interview with Bern Johnson, the executive director of the Environmental Law Alliance Worldwide. Here it is.
So we're here with Bern Johnson, the executive director for ELAW, the Environmental Law Alliance Worldwide. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Heather. Glad to be here.
So can you give us a little history about Environmental Law Alliance Worldwide and what you do for the community?
Yes. ELAW, the Environmental Law Alliance Worldwide, started almost 30 years ago. Lawyers from about 10 countries came together at a law conference at the University of Oregon in Eugene. And as they worked together, they realized that legal systems were different, languages were different, ecosystems were different. But they shared a lot of the same challenges. They were all trying to protect clean air, clean water, protect wild spaces. And if they could work together across borders, share legal and scientific resources across borders, they could all be more effective. So lawyers from 10 countries signed on to this idea of creating a network, which became known as ELAW, the Environmental Law Alliance Worldwide. So in 1991, the U.S. Office of ELAW opened with the mission, basically, of reaching out to committed public interest environmental lawyers around the world and empowering them with legal support, scientific support and expertise, and organizational support to make them more effective at strengthening and enforcing environmental laws in their home countries. And now, almost 30 years later, we're still at it.
Nice. So, in the course of this podcast, we've talked about the environment with a number of charities, but right now, it seems that there's more of a discussion about climate change, especially in politics. So, in your opinion, do you think that this is just a blip, or do you think that climate change and environmental policy will get more attention and that spurs more action?
I think the world is finally giving more attention to climate change. It should have done it a long time ago, but it's good that people are starting to pay more attention to climate change. I mean, frankly, outside the U.S., people are paying more attention than they are in the U.S. The U.S. is really lagging behind on climate change.
Yeah.
And we're working with partners all over the world to try and help them protect the climate through law, and that's a big priority for us.
So this particular discussion and podcast about the environment is focusing more on clean air. What is the biggest cause of pollution or environmental damage when it comes to our air?
Well, the one we're focused on, which relates both to clean air and the climate, is coal.
Okay.
Coal is really a dirty, outdated fuel. The U.S. is moving away from coal, and we really need to stop burning coal to protect the climate. Despite that, in a lot of parts of the world, utilities and governments are still trying to push more coal mining and more coal burning. And so our partners in more than 25 countries have called on Eli to help them challenge coal and shut down coal plants, to block plans to build more coal mines, build more coal-fired power plants. And coal is an area where the Elon network is really powerful. We're a network of lawyers, but we also provide scientific support. Elon has 3 PhD scientists on staff, and so they help lawyers tap the science they need to defeat coal. And, you know, we have a science that shows that coal just hammers the climate. And also, from a local clean air perspective, coal kills people. The people that breathe the emissions from coal plants suffer grave health impacts.
Yeah.
And so if we can get that scientific information, expertise, and resources into the hands of local advocates, and they can use that to shut down coal, we make huge progress. You know, a single mid-sized coal-fired power plant puts out greenhouse gases equivalent to about 600,000 cars.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can shut down one coal-fired power plant, we've done a huge benefit for the climate.
Well, it can be argued, of course, that coal is outdated. So what in your experience has been the reason for more coal plants or more coal production? What's the argument for that?
Well, that's a good question. In my mind, it's mostly that the coal companies, some utilities, have been powerful political players around the world, and they're still able to push governments to subsidize coal and to support coal. Almost everywhere in the world now, alternative, more renewable energy is cheaper than coal. So from a strictly financial standpoint, we should be abandoning coal, but I think that political power of the coal industry is still giving it some legs.
Okay. So, of course, every human being is responsible for doing damage to our environment, but do you believe that businesses and corporations are currently being responsible enough for the damage that they do to the environment?
Well, I'm trained as a lawyer, and I lead an environmental law organization.
Mm-hmm.
So my focus is on strengthening and enforcing environmental laws. I think businesses that operate around the world should obey the environmental laws in the countries where they operate and should hold themselves to that high standard. Some businesses are bad actors and try and skirt environmental laws, and I think they should be caught and punished, but I'm not ready to say all businesses are bad.
Sure. So there is an ongoing lawsuit, Juliana versus the United States, also known as the Youth Climate Lawsuit, and there are 21 defendants who filed this lawsuit against the government stating that the U.S.'s actions regarding climate change violate the youngest generation's constitutional rights to life, liberty, and property, as well as failing to protect them. So when I first heard about this case, I thought it was outrageous, but in like a groundbreaking, kind of earth-shattering way. Can you speak to the reaction of this case in the law community and the environmental community that you work with?
You know, I think people are excited about this case. People all over the world have heard of this case, and there have been climate youth cases brought in other countries. you know, there have been many efforts to use courts in the U.S. to take on climate. So far, those efforts in the U.S. have not succeeded. Mm-hmm. In my view, we need to keep pushing courts to take a strong stand in terms of protecting the climate. And the Giuliani case is trying to do that, push the law forward. You know, we've never dealt with an environmental challenge like protecting the climate. It's a single climate that the whole world uses, and lots of factors contribute to the climate damage we're doing. So courts need a new approach, and I'm in favor of lawyers who are trying to push new approaches to protect the climate through law.
Are there many new approaches when it comes to protecting climate through law, or are we kind of working with the same formula that has been happening for the past 100 years or so?
No, there are new approaches. There's been success in the environmental impact assessment process, for example, which is how, what we do when we study like a proposed coal plant before giving it a permit. Courts have ruled now that the agencies must study the climate impact of a project before allowing that project to go forward. That's a new step in the right direction. In the Philippines, there's a claim brought before the Human Rights Commission saying that the damage to the climate has violated the human rights of Filipinos.
Okay.
Focusing on human rights is a new approach. There's an exciting case in Germany where German lawyers are representing a Peruvian farmer who's being damaged by climate actions, and they're trying to hold a large German energy company responsible. So there's very new, exciting developments going forward around the world.
So, of course, the word worldwide is part of your organization's name, and you're based out of Oregon. What areas have you been working with worldwide?
Well, we've worked with partners in 80 countries around the world, pretty much all over the world. Right now, we have a visiting fellow here from Russia, from the Russian Far East, Sakhalin Island. She's working with us on protecting the marine ecosystems on Sakhalin Island. We have another fellow from Brazil who's arriving today. We're doing quite a bit of work in Brazil, working with indigenous lawyers down there. One of our lawyers recently came back from West Africa, pushing hard in Francophone West Africa. We do a huge amount of work in India, South Africa, pretty much all over the world.
Okay. And you mentioned Brazil, and as of today's recording, the Amazon is still on fire. What kind of outcomes do you think we'll see in the aftermath from this tragedy?
Well, you know, ELAW's approach, we always work with a local partner in any country we work in. That's just central to ELAW's approach. And we're working with some indigenous Brazilian lawyers. And our approach is that we need to strengthen the Brazilian indigenous community so they can speak out for the Amazon and protect the Amazon. My understanding is that most of these fires in the Amazon are man-made, and they're part of agricultural clearing processes. And I think the people who are setting these fires should be caught and punished. But ultimately, I think it's a matter of the Brazilian legal community deciding what steps it's going to take, and we want to strengthen those Brazilian indigenous lawyers so they can be a strong voice for protecting the Amazon.
When it comes to working with lawyers in a different region or a different community, is it difficult to adjust to the laws and the rulings on file in that country, or is it something that you are able to work with?
Yeah, that's a good question, because legal systems all over the world are different.
Mm-hmm.
Two answers. First, roughly half of our work is science. As I mentioned, we have three PhD staff scientists who work with local lawyers who are working in their home countries around the world. And science really translates across borders well. The same science that says we shouldn't be burning coal in the U.S. says we shouldn't be burning coal in India, South Africa, the Dominican Republic. So our science work really translates across borders well. On the legal side, part of the reason why we always work with the local partner is because we need to work with someone who knows the local legal system, knows local politics, knows what's politically possible, knows the environmental challenges in that country. You know, legal systems are different, but some core principles like citizens having access to information about the environment, citizens having the right to participate in decisions about the environment, citizens wanting to breathe clean air, drink clean water, those core components are constant across legal systems. And so we are able to share a lot of lessons. And, you know, I have found, I'm trained as a U.S. lawyer, mm-hmm. but one thing I have found refreshing is that courts around the world are willing to look at how courts in other countries have taken on some of these challenges, like groundwater contamination. A court in India will say, well, how did courts in the U.S. look at groundwater contamination? What can we learn from other court decisions? So sharing court decisions and jurisprudence across borders has proven very powerful, and we are able to work across legal systems.
So let's say someone hears this podcast and they want to begin giving to Environmental Law Alliance Worldwide. Can you talk about what donations do for your organization?
Yes. You know, in a way, ELA is a little bit like a fire station for the environment. We've built this network of public interest environmental lawyers around the world that we know and trust, and they know and trust us and call on us for legal and scientific help. You know, a lawyer in Kenya trying to keep coal in the ground starts to take on a proposed coal plant. That lawyer contacts us and says, I need the science of keeping coal in the ground. I need legal strategies to keep coal in the ground. And we call that our demand-driven model. We receive these requests from help from partners around the world, and we need to provide that legal scientific help. And so donations to ELA allow us to be ready to provide rapid responses to these requests. You know, sometimes lawyers contact us and say, I'm going to court next week or next month, and I need information rapidly. And, you know, we're not able to develop foundation support and develop a big project. We just need to be able to put our legal team and scientific team to work quickly, and donations give us the flexibility to do that and provide rapid responses when advocates on the ground need that help.
So before we go, do you have any upcoming events or programs you'd like to highlight?
Two things that I'd like to mention, Heather. First, our Defending Defenders program. I think people all over the world are seeing more and more attacks and threats against environmental advocates. Governments and businesses, you know, basically bad actors are trying to silence opposition. And we've seen partners put in jail, we've seen partners threatened, we've seen partners shot. And so we are really stepping up our work to defend our partners and help them improve their own security and make themselves more resilient. And so that is an area we really want to step up our work. For a long time, we've been there for our partners when they're threatened. Now we're trying to help them take steps in advance to avoid threats and prepare for threats. The other area that's, I think, really powerful is our fellows program. As I mentioned, right now we're hosting a fellow from Russia, and we have a fellow from Brazil arriving today. Lawyers around the world want to come to Eugene, work with us, study English, work with our scientists, work with our lawyers. And that's high-impact work. Those lawyers that come here and work with us gain skills, gain connections, gain experience. And we always have more lawyers who want to come to work with us than we can afford. So donations to ELA will help more fellows come to ELA to work with us.
That's great. So, Bern, thank you so much for calling in and telling us about ELA and the amazing work you're doing for our area and for the world.
Thank you, Heather. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Okay, and that was our interview with Byrne Johnson, the executive director of Environmental Law Alliance Worldwide. Well, how do you feel that went for you?
I enjoyed it. I also love that their acronym, it's ELAW. So they have E-Law. The word law
E-Law.
Still
See,
in
yeah,
the name.
I like
like,
that.
Clever,
E-Law,
right?
Baby.
Yeah, so one of the things, because I feel like clean air is a harder thing for your average person to
yes.
do anything about, right?
Right.
I mean, there are certain things, like I don't burn coal.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind for...
I don't burn coal either that I know
yeah,
of.
Yeah, yeah. You don't mind for it either.
That's also correct.
Yeah, I've been to your house. You don't mind for it. you don't have a coal mine in your backyard.
I can verify I don't have a coal mine.
Yeah, so there are certain things that...
I also don't frack in my backyard.
Yeah, you don't frack. Yeah, yeah. So there are things where it's just like, this is a little more of a bigger conversation.
Yeah,
so
it's
like,
more of advocacy work.
Yeah, it's advocacy work, but then it's also businesses and corporations, manufacturing... Like, there has to be more responsibility with the company when it comes to taking care of pollution or output, right? So, we did talk a little bit about this one case that's happening right now. It's called Juliana versus the United States.
Okay.
Juliana is a last name.
Okay.
So, there's 21 defendants.
Holy moly.
Yeah, and they're all between the ages of 12 and 23.
Oh, wow.
And it's, AKA, it's the youth climate lawsuit.
Sure.
And made headlines where... This group of kids was just like, we're suing the government because you are not taking
care
of the environment, and we're going to have to grow up and live in this dirty environment.
Right.
It's they say that it is violating their constitutional rights to life, liberty, and property.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, when I heard about that lawsuit, I was just like, oh,
wow,
that's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that you can sue the government, but it was one of those moments where I was like, oh my God, I can't believe they can sue the government.
Right.
It was kind of, you know, mind-blowing that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we talked a little bit about that, and it's something that, you know, there may be more and more of these types of lawsuits.
Yeah, I
that
think so. And again, it goes back to the more tangible stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can't, it's harder to get people behind. I know people are not going to like it.
Sure.
But I'm just kind of I'm talking about it more from those of us who hear the climate change debate and we go, "Yes, I believe something's happening." Obviously, you think something's happening because data doesn't lie.
Yeah.
Your hottest July every year is now every year.
Yeah, every year now, yeah.
And so you obviously know that's happening, but then you do feel a little bit like, okay, well, short of what I can do, I think that it falls on bigger people beyond my pay grade, so to speak.
Yes, I don't like the conversation that is focused on what can you do.
Yeah,
I don't like that conversation because it is not entirely, like, of course, we all together are responsible for how clean our environment is. But when it comes to our output, I take plane trips, I have a car, and I drive around.
Yeah.
I have a house with electricity that I use, and then the food that I eat.
Yeah.
That's my carbon footprint.
Right.
But beyond that, I'm not outputting metric tons of some kind of chemical into the air or, you know, tons of garbage into a landfill.
Yeah. Yeah.
I compost, people.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
I don't compost. Yeah, I should do more of that. But my yard's such a garbage yard. I probably just throw garbage back there.
If you throw garbage back there, the moles would probably like it.
Yeah, they would. They would. There'd be too many of them at that point. But like,
ooh, it's a feast.
But like if somebody were suing the government over the fact that like the sea level rose in Florida like a foot, people are going to be less apt to be like, yeah, go after them.
Yeah.
Right. But if you're suing because I can't breathe in my city.
Yeah.
That feels a lot more like people go like, yeah, you can't.
That is legitimate.
Right? I mean, not that the other one's not legitimate. It's just harder to kind of...
It's harder to make a case against that, maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
Whereas the clean air one is like, hey, man, people are getting cancer.
Yes.
Right? Like...
Yeah.
Like,
and it can be traced to this
thing. Yeah, you're making these cities unlivable.
Yes.
Right.
Speaking of unlivable cities, I did pull this list of the most polluted air on the planet.
Okay. Ooh, can't wait for this.
Yeah, so according
to super depressing.
Womp, womp.
Yeah. All right, tell us.
So according to the World Health Organization, they found 50 cities who had the most polluted air in 2018.
Okay.
And they tracked worldwide levels of dangerous particulates.
Mm-hmm.
The most harmful kind, PM2.5, contains tiny particles small enough to enter the bloodstream through the lungs.
Wow.
Okay.
So how many American cities are on this list?
None.
Get out of here.
I know, right?
We're awesome.
America. Wow. Number one.
We're not number one. We don't have a single city in the top 50?
No, not in the top 50. No.
Dang.
Now, can you guess where one, I'd say there is only one. Okay, there are two countries in the top 10. Only two countries.
I can tell you right now. It's India and China.
You're right about India. China's not in the top 10, but they are into the top 50.
Yeah.
Yeah, so India is 9 of the top 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And number 8, Bamenda, Cameroon.
Oh, wow, Cameroon.
And yeah, so it's deforestation, changing weather patterns are the primary explanation for that city's poor air quality. It's the most polluted city.
India has got 9 of the top 10?
Yeah, yeah.
Get your ass together.
Yeah, right? So of the 50, I did tabulate. Mongolia, Ulaanbaatar is the capital. It's the most. It's on this list. Pakistan has 3. Karachi is on that list.
Wow.
India has 14.
Oh my god. 9 out of 50.
9 of which are in the top 10.
Oh my gosh.
Uganda has 1.
Oh wow.
Kuwait has 1.
Okay.
Saudi Arabia has 1.
Okay.
For Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, those are more about oil.
Yeah.
For Karachi, Mongolia, Pakistan, India, China, Bangladesh, it's more about manufacturing.
Yeah.
China or Bangladesh has 4. China, of the top 50, can you guess how many China has?
9.
No.
How many?
25.
Oh my gosh. Are you serious?
Half of the list are cities in China.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so there's this one city called Jingzhou, China. Mm-hmm. And in 2016, a man who was visiting sued the local Jingzhou government because he wanted to be reimbursed for the costs of the pollution masks he bought while he was visiting. Right? Okay. That's unbelievable. So I also printed off a picture for this city called Gurugram, India. There are many Fortune 500 companies like Google and Intel who have offices there. It's a city just southwest of New Delhi.
Google. Yes. Google, big old
big old corporate company.
Take care of everybody, Google. Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely a white collar, wealthy business hub kind of a thing, but the air quality is poor. This is a photo.
Oh my.
Of a man walking down the street.
Oh my.
That's during the day.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. You can't see that man.
Yeah.
And he's probably 20 yards from the photographer. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So I'll post this link because every single city has a picture that accompanies it.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And some of them are like this, especially when it comes to the pictures from China.
Yeah.
There are people walking around and they're walking through air that is like a thick fog.
Wow.
Smog, manufacturing, coal. Yeah. It's terrible.
See, and this is kind of cool information, and it's awesome to share because I think that this is something again that I love about getting to talk to people like this and doing research on this subject. The narrative is the United States is god awful at this. We're the worst.
Yeah.
But we actually, that's what makes this conversation so important, because we actually are really sounds like good at it. We're not in the top 50.
We're not terrible at it, but I think part of it is the way that manufacturing has developed.
So they go to places that are more friendly.
Yeah, if there were more manufacturing jobs here, we could be just horrible. As bad. But also, manufacturing, I don't know if I'm correct on this, but I assume that there haven't been that many advances when it comes to manufacturing things like coal or like Intel processors or anything that really has to be made in a factory,
right?
I mean, we're still talking about this is how you make this. End of story.
So have we the question is, have we outsourced
our air pollution?
Our air pollution.
I think we have.
That's entirely possible.
Yeah, and for the cities.
Okay, not as cool as I thought.
Not as cool as you thought. So there's the city in Mongolia. There are children and elderly people who are regularly evacuated from the city when the air quality is bad.
Wow.
And it's always bad.
Okay.
So as far as the top 5 cities, Delhi is number 6. There are definitely things over and over again. The Indian capital was once the most polluted city in the world. And they talk about this was once the most polluted city in the world a couple of times for some of these. Which is ridiculous.
Wow.
Or the most polluted city in China, you know?
Wow.
So, Patna, India, number 5. Varanasi, India, 4. Gaya, India, is 3. Faridabad, India, is 2. Smog levels spike during the winter there. So the pollutants get trapped.
Wow.
close to the ground.
Wow.
And Kanpur, India is number one.
Wow. I am sorry, Kieran.
Yeah, our friend and coworker. Our friend and
coworker Kieran, who has she's Indian. She has an Indian family. I'm sorry, Kieran.
Yeah, that sucks.
This is terrible. We apologize.
Yeah. So there are a ton of places that just manufacture all the things we use every single day.
Yeah.
So like that may be one of those things that we as individuals can do better. Find out where our stuff that we wear and buy and consume comes from.
Very cool. I heard something about like t-shirts and
yeah.
like how you should try and avoid buying all new t-shirts all the time. Like,
yeah.
Like, that's what makes eBay kind of cool because people, you know,
are yeah. they're reuse, recycle, repurpose.
Yeah. So, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. All depressing stuff.
Yes.
But good information.
Good information. Yes.
So, give you some sense of upcoming events. We are wrapping up. Local coordinator training. Our last two are today. So we're talking to you
yes.
today while simultaneously
uh-huh.
training. That's how cool we are. That's
yeah.
how amazing
we're so cool that I'm in Illinois right now.
You're in two places at once.
Yeah.
You're doing the podcast and you're someplace else.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how awesome we are.
Magic.
Yeah. And then we also have Spokane on September 12th. On September 14th, this coming Saturday, we have our Nerd Herd. Fun run with the folks from Department of Retirement Systems at 10 a.m. At the Capitol Lake. We also have Golf for Veterans at the Eagles Pride Golf Course in DuPont on September 14th. Our first week of To Give is coming up fast and furious, people. That's where you can get a $5 Starbucks card just for donating $5 or more through your paycheck or
yeah.
upping your current donation or volunteering an hour. Also, double days will happen then. Like
double
Thursday,
days.
You'll be able to actually give to the CFD. And then, of course, the big old huge masquerade ball on October 19th. On a personal note, this will be the last time that you hear my voice, I think, regularly.
Regularly, yeah. We do have an After Dark podcast
yes,
you're going to be partaking
yes.
in.
Yes, and I really super duper hope that that the hostess continues to call me to come and do some of these because I super love these
mm-hmm.
and I would definitely be willing to take a break to do it. I actually have taken a position at the amazing charity Raise for Rowan as the executive director, so this is my last full-time podcast.
Yeah.
This is very, very weird. So I apologize to all of our listeners who actually liked our witty banter back and forth, and I apologize to all of our listeners who didn't like it at all.
Yeah, as well you should. I'm going to have to either witty banter in voices to myself,
yes,
or, you know, find somebody who can, like...
Well, and I will definitely, anytime Ms. Lucas calls...
You're going to come running?
I will do a podcast.
Okay.
So anytime you call, I will do a podcast.
Okay.
So I'm excited about that. But I'm very sad to not only leave the Combined Fund Drive, but the Secretary of State's office, who have been fantastic over the years, have supported all of the kooky, weird things that we decided to do, including this podcast.
Yeah.
And of course, I am sad to leave my friend full time. with doing this, but I think you'll be fine. I think you'll do great.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're going to do great.
Thank you.
I mean, develop some voices, definitely
okay.
some accents,
yeah,
just so you can play off each other back and forth.
That Australian one was pretty solid this
year.
Yeah,
I think we're going to have to. I think we're going to really have to play
yeah,
on that one.
Yeah,
a lot.
Maybe some Gil and Bill action.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, really, thank you everybody for listening. I hope that I was able to help. Bring some information to those who were interested in helping anywhere and everywhere they could. So stay tuned. The podcasts are going to continue. The content's not going to stop. We got a ton of great charities still left for the year. And, of course, there'll be some fun After Darks that we'll do. And
there will
hopefully
be.
I'll be able to come do those things. But really want to thank everyone for listening. And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.